All comments, views, and opinions expressed during the following program do not reflect the views of this station. All topics discussed are meant for educational purposes only. Talk with your doctor before starting any new treatments. Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned to find out how you can open your mind to new possibilities in life.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in Los Angeles. And on this show, every week, we deal with a variety of issues around mental health. And my own perspective is a very holistic one. So when we deal with issues here, we're talking about body, mind, and spirit. And the belief in my personal philosophy as well as professionally that balance is the key in any approach to healing and change and growth in our lives, and balance and awareness of what our mind's doing and saying to us, what our body's doing and saying to us, and how spirit is a key component in that, and how that inner voice, intuition, whatever you want to call it, can speak just as loudly if we're willing to listen, and can guide us just as importantly as the other aspects. And this is a live call-in show, so I remind you as we get into tonight's topic that if you're so inclined, feel free to call in and contribute a thought, a comment, a question, or some issue you might be dealing with. And the toll-free number is 1-877-900-5369. 877-900-5369. If you're in Phoenix, locally, it's 602-277-5369. So I welcome all of you back to listening, and if you're new, hopefully you'll keep joining us. And tonight's topic is on an approach to psychotherapy known as psychoanalysis. And specifically, psychoanalysis as it relates to homosexuality. And later I'll be introducing my guest, Constance Kaplan, who is the president of the Association of Psychoanalytical Thought of Southern California, and is helping to coordinate a conference this Saturday here in Los Angeles, which she'll be talking more about on homosexuality and psychoanalysis or psychoanalytic thought. A number of times on the show we've had issues relating to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender lifestyles, orientations. There's a lot of different words that people will use in describing sexual orientation. And these shows have often taken a very personal perspective, and my guests are usually very good at bringing their own personal story into the topic. I've been very open in the past that I'm a gay man, as well as a therapist here in Los Angeles, and have brought my own journey into the conversations when it's been relevant. I remember the first time I ever went into therapy myself, and I was 17 years old and having a lot of physical issues like headaches and stomach aches and stuff that the doctors, after much testing, could not find anything physically wrong with me. And the doctor turned to my mother at one of the meetings and said, "You know what, we can't find anything physically. All the tests we've run are all normal. Everything's fine. Maybe there's something emotional going on. Maybe he needs to talk to somebody." And he said this to my parents in front of me, and I was ready to kiss the doctor. Well, for a number of reasons, but basically because it was finally opening the door to the fact that I needed someone to talk to. I had so much stuff going on inside myself, and at age 17, in the late 60s, you didn't ask to go to see a therapist. I mean, today it's very different. You know, there are a lot of teenagers in counseling and a lot more that may need it. But it's also something that is so much more acceptable today. I remember in my intake interview, actually it was at Hillside Hospital in Queens, and the therapist that was doing my intake interview was asking me a lot of questions, and all of a sudden I knew that I needed to say something, and she asked me if there was something particular that I had mastered that I needed to share. And I remember sitting there for what seemed to be hours, but I know it was at least 15 minutes, trembling, sweating, not being able to look at her before I finally got the words out of my mouth, I think I have homosexual tendencies. That was the most rational way I could say it at the time. It was the most amazing thing to hear come out of my mouth, and I was waiting for the sky to fall in any minute. But her reaction was, I don't even remember what she said. What I do remember is her excusing herself for a little while, coming back a few minutes later and asking me to follow her into another office where there was a second and possibly a third therapist, and she asked me to repeat it. So now all of a sudden I have an audience. And it took me again at least 10 minutes to say the words again, feeling full well that everything was going to come tumbling down on me. My parents were going to find out all this stuff was going to go on. And I don't think they had many teenagers at that point bringing that topic up in the late 60s. And remember, Stonewall didn't happen until 1969. So I started, they assigned me to a therapist, and over months I kept talking about this, and the therapist really did not know much about homosexuality, and when she knew that I was dating the same girl for about 7 months my senior year in high school, was going to the prom, it was a relief to her to think that it was just a phase. Myself knowing true well that it wasn't, but it was a relief for me not to have to keep talking about it and to put it back on a shelf. And it wasn't until probably my sophomore year in college when I started seeing a therapist on campus that I really started delving into the issue. Now today, as I said, there are a lot of therapists who are fairly well-versed or very well-versed, whether they're gay or straight, in this issue. And there are a lot of people, particularly in major cities, that have a mixed clientele, whether they're gay or straight therapists. And there's a lot more resources out there, but there's still a lot of homophobia, and there's still a lot of bias, and there's still a great deal of therapists who are, in a sense, insensitive and not particularly educated and don't know enough to say to someone, you know what, I don't think I'm the one to work with you or to help you. I'm not rejecting you, but I think there may be a therapist that will have a greater understanding, or maybe that they are too prejudiced and are not willing to admit it and end up doing more damage to those clients. Why am I going through all this? Well, clearly, there are always horror stories about a therapist, how a therapist has treated a client with a lack of consciousness, a lack of sensitivity, maybe direct judgment and prejudice over certain issues, or negating something a client's saying. I know that I've had clients who started therapy with me and had horror stories about being gay, coming out to a previous therapist, and the therapist telling them that it's wrong and trying to change them. And we know, you know, there's been a lot in the papers about reparative therapy, which we may have time to get into later. There's a lot of damage that is still being done in therapy. And sometimes it's the individual therapist, sometimes it's the school of thought and the approach that somebody's taking. Sometimes it's a collective bias and a collective prejudice, just like in a society or a culture. We know that in our culture and our society in America, there's a great deal of homophobia still. And there are certain institutions that promote it even more, some of which are certain religions, and some of which are certain schools of thought and even therapeutic approaches. And psychoanalysis in the past has been one of those that has gone through some major transformation over the last 10 years in terms of opening its doors and hearts and minds to therapists who are gay or lesbian, as well as approaches to treatment. There was a conference that I actually don't know what the date of the conference was. Actually, it was, here it is, December of 1998. And it was a public forum on homophobia, analysis of a permissible prejudice. And the conference itself was actually, I believe, sponsored by the American Psychoanalytic Association. And what I respected about what I read about this was the fact that what they were doing were calling themselves on what has been permissible for too long. And the speakers were all very clear that homophobia within the context of psychoanalysis, psychotherapy, or anything is destructive not just to the organization, to the profession, but particularly, unfortunately, to the clients and the society in general. In fact, Ralph Rufton, who was one of the speakers that day, said, when we speak of internalized homophobia, we refer to the shame, denigration, and anger turned inward onto the self of the homosexual individual, either as a re-internalization or from the absorption of homophobic attitudes in the environment, and then identifying with the hatred and fearful object. The primary emotion is shame, but a whole gamut of inhibitions, loss of self-esteem, depression, and self-destructive behavior then often follow. And he went on to say, in my institute classes, the assumption that homosexuality was a disorder and could be treated went unquestioned in the 1960s. And it's an important topic that we're dealing with. It's important that just as therapists, we're expecting our clients to grow and learn and expand beyond their previous notions of who they are. It's commendable when a field of thought, an approach, and a profession allows themselves to do the same and then can also do treatment by example. So we're going to talk more about this, and I'll introduce my guest when we return after these messages, so stay tuned.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break. Great leaders make a world of difference in all aspects of life, work, family, community, and even at home. By transforming your workforce into a team of enthusiastic leaders, each individual makes a world of difference in his or her own way, optimizing the potential of the whole team. iLead Training and Consulting knows that nothing is more frustrating than a boring, time-consuming, fruitless meeting. With a wide array of topics, our consultants customize their presentations to meet your specific needs. Direct meetings that run on time, stick to the agenda, and achieve their objectives. iLead covers topics that include, but aren't limited to, working together as a team, goal achievement skills, executive development programs, restructuring and downsizing, as well as expanding into foreign markets. iLead Training and Consulting can also help groups work through existing issues and obstacles. The result of their efforts is rededication to working together effectively. They can help your entire organization run better. Call them for details at 972-569-8822. That's 972-569-8822, or go to iLeadUSA.com.
A message for drivers from the American Association of Poison Control Centers. If you add or change antifreeze and other automotive fluids, keep them in their original containers. Close the containers tightly and store them in a childproof cabinet, because small children shouldn't mistake them for drinks. If auto fluids spill when you add them or drip from the vehicle at any time or place, clean them up right away before pets can lick them. You want to take care of your children and animals as well as your car.
Hey Every day, millions of people in the United States wake up to billions of allergens. Introducing new Clarinex brand of desloratadine tablets. One tiny blue pill. Clarinex provides receptor protection to help block histamine. Get 24-hour, non-drowsy relief from your allergy symptoms all day, all night, all year. Side effects are similar to sugar pill, including sore throat, dry mouth, and fatigue. Clarinex is available by prescription only. Call 1-800-CLARINEX or visit clarinex.com for important information. And look for our ad in Health Magazine. Wherever you are, whatever your allergy, talk to your doctor to learn more about new 24-hour Clarinex.
Listen to Healing and Transformation with Dr. Eric Alsterberg at his new time, Fridays at 12 noon. Dr. Eric is a licensed clinical psychologist in active practice. He will discuss psychological and emotional problems and difficulties with healing. Healing and Transformation also features spiritual aspects and principles of healing. So if you're looking for direction, guidance, and solutions to life's difficulties and challenges, great or small, then tune in to Healing and Transformation, hosted by Dr. Eric Alsterberg. Call in and get answers.
Talk to our expert hosts. Call toll-free 877-900-5369. In the Phoenix area, call 602-277-KFNX.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. Tonight's topic is psychoanalysis and homosexuality. And I'd like to introduce my guest tonight. Her name is Constance Kaplan, who is a marriage, family, and child psychotherapist. She specializes in working with unique issues of creative artists and their families. And she has a long list of organizations she's been a part of. She's president of the Association of Psychoanalytic Thought of Southern California. She's on the Committee for Gay and Lesbian Issues and the Committee for Psychotherapy Associates at the American Psychoanalytic Association. And there's a lot more I could say about her, but I'm going to leave it up to her to say whatever else she wants to. Connie, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster.
Thank you, Stuart. It's really wonderful to talk to your audience. And I couldn't help but smile when you were telling your story for a couple of reasons. Number one, the people who you quoted, in particular Ralph Rauten, will be the lead speaker at our conference this weekend, as will a couple of the other people who sat on that panel on homosexuality, a permissible prejudice, ? The reason that conference was so astonishing is because the American Psychoanalytic Association is the very powerful voice and executive body of mainstream psychoanalysis in America, and very much was behind a lot of some hugely biased points of view that pathologized homosexuality. So we have come so far, and this conference in 1998 really signaled that there had been an enormous sea change. And now they were asking their own analysts to take a look at themselves and at their own biases and prejudices and have the same kind of courage that we ask our patients to have, which is to take responsibility. Now, at that conference, just to kind of, you know, underscore the complexity of all of this, I was sitting in maybe the third row. It takes place at the Waldorf, which, you know, is really elegant and in this big kind of ballroom auditorium. And it was packed with clinicians, and it was in December of 98. And, you know, there we all were, and we were unwrapping our winter gear and settling in and focusing on the likes of, and you named an all-star cast among therapists who deal with sexuality, Nancy Chodorow and Ralph Rauten, Susan Vaughn. And they were about to navigate this, you know, rather perilous turf. And just as they were about to begin, there was this huge banner that ran the entire length of the presenter's table, and it boldly read the American Psychoanalytic Association, you know, which has been the voice of clinical authority. and it started to slip loose of its scotch-taped moorings, and slowly, very slowly, picking up momentum, you know, as my eyes started to widen, one end of the banner began to droop, and then in a very undignified way, promptly flopped to the floor. Well, as someone who's put on conferences, my first thought was Velcro would have been better. But the analyst sitting next to me had a very different thought. So now here you get the homophobia, right? Because she showed up. But now here's the inner dialogue. Seizing upon the moment as kind of a concretization of her inner thoughts, she turns to her male colleagues, and with barely concealed contempt, she prophesizes, "There goes the American." As in the American, there goes the entire organization flopping to the floor because we're discussing homosexuality and homophobia in a compassionate and sympathetic and rigorously intellectual light. And so, you know, I gathered compelling data that the American's decision to revisit its biases had not reached everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of what we're dealing with. So even though you have a huge body, an organizational body that changes its point of view, you still have to pull these people along.
Mm-hmm.
But these are you know, to be a therapist is a privilege and it's powerful.
Yeah.
And, you know, these people need to really continue to pay attention to not just overt homophobia, but a more insidious kind.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
There was something else that Dr. Rafton is his name?
Rauten.
Rauten said, from what I researched, and he said, Professor Gomes has talked about how religion is usually the first source that people use to justify bigotry and oppression.
Mm-hmm.
I am afraid that we have to acknowledge that psychoanalysis and some psychoanalytic writings may very well be the second source that people turn to.
Well, who do you think Dr. Laura turned to?
Yeah.
There is, you know, in contrast, I mean, one of the great things about The American is that we have people like myself and people like Ralph and Susan and Gary Grossman, all these people speaking at our conference who are really on the cutting edge of what is changing in our perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it because they're gay and lesbian, and they are so rigorously changed, trained that they can bring a balance and therefore change a lot of points of view. Because they're working from within,
right?
But on the other side of it, you have a man named Socarides. I don't know if you've heard the name.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, you know, really just diehard in the wool. I'll read you something. That's his point of view, and he comes out of that organization as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is who I'm quite convinced Laura quoted. He says homosexuality is filled with aggression, destruction, self-deceit. I mean, you know, what would my grandmother say?
Mm-hmm.
It's a masquerade of life involving only destruction, mutual defeat, exploitation of the partner and the self. He says things like, if gay and lesbian people think that they have the capacity to love, they're just fooling themselves, which flies in the face of you know, some of the most leading researchers and analysts who have pointed out that there is no difference between romantic love, between gays and with gays and lesbians and heterosexuals, and on the research proves that love is love.
Well, on that loving note, we're going to take a break here. So please stay tuned, and we'll be back with Constance Kaplan and Tell the Truth Faster.
Tell the Truth Faster. We'll be right back after this station break. Stuart Altschuler, a licensed practicing psychotherapist since 1974, wants to let you know about his website at www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You will find the resources you need in these areas: self-empowerment, positive thinking, attention deficit disorder, individual and group HIV/AIDS counseling, addictions and compulsive behavior, intimacy and relationships. Get the information you need on these topics and more. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com. There's even a place to email Stuart with your questions, comments, and requests for information regarding his work. At www.tellthetruthfaster.com, you can find additional links for groups, organizations, and websites dedicated to help you identify and heal the issues you are experiencing.
Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com today.
Here is John Whitehead.
6 weeks after terrorists attacked New York and Washington, D.C., killing thousands and putting the nation on full alert, the Patriot Act was signed into law by President Bush. In an effort to catch those responsible for the tragedy, the new law allows government officials to search homes without a warrant and lock suspects up for days without charging them with a crime. In fact, the Patriot Act grants the government such sweeping powers that Congress refused to pass it without sunset expiration provisions. Many supporters of the act claim these newly expanded powers will help government fight terrorism more effectively. But civil libertarians disagree, saying these new powers are a serious threat to our constitutional freedoms. The point of law is our U.S. Constitution. It protects the freedoms our nation's lawmakers should uphold, even during wartime, and that's one of your first liberties.
This has been a public service announcement from the Rutherford Institute, a nonprofit legal organization. For a free book about your first liberties, call toll-free 888-287-1787.
Listen to Healing and Transformation with Dr. Eric Alsterberg at his new time, Fridays at 12 noon. Dr. Eric is a licensed clinical psychologist in active practice. He will discuss psychological and emotional problems and difficulties with healing. Healing and Transformation also features spiritual aspects and principles of healing. So if you're looking for direction, guidance, and solutions to life's difficulties and challenges, great or small, then tune in to Healing and Transformation, hosted by Dr. Eric Alsterberg. Call in and get answers.
Physical, mental, spiritual, although they are three completely separate components of every person, without proper balance, all three will be affected. Also, how it's logically connected to your performance in the workplace. People often mistake the issues of spirituality as something celestial or beyond this world. Whispers of the Soul is a show that will concentrate not only on your interpersonal relationships and spirituality, but the truth is, if your soul is downcast, you won't be at the top of your game. That's Whispers of the Soul, Tuesday afternoons at 3, right here on Hot Talk, AM 1100, KFNN. X.
A message from the American Association of Poison Control Centers. When you use antifreeze the way it was intended, to keep an engine running well in extreme temperatures, it does a great job. But storing auto fluids improperly, in a beverage bottle or a basin for example, can endanger children and animals. Keep new and used fluids in their original containers, stored safely away from children and pets. For poison help 24 hours a day, call 1-800-222-1222.
Here's your current Hot Talk 1100 KFNX weather forecast.
Good Wednesday evening, Phoenix. Ryan with your KFNX weather forecast. Partly cloudy skies tonight and tomorrow with a little bit wind at times, with highs hitting around the lower 80s with the valley lows near 55 degrees. Clear and warmer for the weekend, with the statewide temperatures looking like this: 41 in Flagstaff, 45 in Prescott, 67 in Tucson, and at 10:30, 70 degrees right here at KFNX in Phoenix.
This is the 50,000-watt powerhouse station, serving all of Arizona and beyond. Hot Talk, 1100 KFNX, Cave Creek, Phoenix, a division of North American Broadcasting Company.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and tonight's topic is psychoanalysis and homosexuality. My guest tonight is Constance Kaplan, who is a psychotherapist here in Los Angeles and president of the Association of Psychoanalytical Thought of Southern California. Connie, I really like the direction we're going in right now. I'd like to actually ask you, though, since there's so many different modalities of therapy and psychoanalysis just being one of many, and not one that actually I'm all that familiar with, to be honest with you, can you tell us a little bit about what psychoanalysis is, psychoanalytic psychotherapy, and how it's different from other kinds of therapy?
Sure. And, you know, Stuart, you're not alone in not knowing enough of what we do, and that's our fault. Mm-hmm. And part of it is because of what we just talked about in the last segment, that we have been woefully out of step in certain areas. In other areas, we are just so advanced in terms of, you know, even understanding baby's development, needle-natal development, understanding, you know, how to the motivation of world leaders and world events and neuroscience. So it's an interesting combination of, you know, either being associated with being kind of 19th century, you know, Freud, who's mm-hmm. quite brilliant, by the way, but he was of, you know, of 19th century and early 20th century.
Right.
But I'm hoping to, and people at my conference this weekend, to help you understand just how contemporary it really is.
Mm-hmm.
So let me answer it this way. This is just my lens. You know, many of my patients come in and talk about their fate. And I reframe fate as this. I tell them, you know, it's what you don't know about yourself that shapes your fate, that chooses your mate, how you experience love, work, and relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly over a lifetime, we form inner conflicts and beliefs and perceptions and distortions and strategies for coping that, if not conscious and courageously explored with awareness, will restrict your ability to author your own life. And you hear, here I am again, here I am again, the same thing in the relationship, here I am again. And so psychoanalytic therapy is really one of the great liberating forces of our time. At its best, it is a partnership between a patient and a therapist. It's grounded in respect for the individual's autonomy, with no preconceived notion of what needs to be fixed. It seeks to help the patient achieve greater freedom, to arrive at his or her own meanings, so conscious choices can be made towards one's life's goal. Notice, your meaning, not my preconceived notion of what your life should be about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do a couple of things which are very specific to psychoanalysis. We use something called the transference, which is, rather than just talk intellectually and conceptually about what's going on, we let the issue ripen in the room, in the here and now, and in the relationship, so that the room becomes a microcosm of what the patient's challenges are in the outer world. And it's at that moment that you're able to kind of explore and point out the strategy that's going on, the projections that may be happening, the misunderstandings. But that requires a therapist to be very mature and very self-aware of our own issues that come up.
Sure.
Right? Because, you know, let's face it, we're not a blank slate.
Right.
And then we do something called free association, which is recognizes the beauty and the profoundness of the unconscious, that when ideas are allowed to come up in kind of a random way, apparently random way, they're not, and then the person has the chance to hear the echo of their own thoughts with the therapist kind of, you know, mirroring that and expanding on it, they begin to see some patterns and some linkages emerge so that they can begin to understand what has been in their way
mm-hmm.
toward love and health
mm-hmm.
and work. That's my understanding of it, and that's what I practice. Now, I don't do the, you know, strict psychoanalysis on the couch
mm-hmm.
Where somebody's lying down and I sit behind them four times a week. I do psychoanalytic psychotherapy, but nevertheless, if you distill it, it's the same work.
Well, then it leaves me more confused, because from what you just described, I do psychoanalytic psychotherapy.
Uh-huh.
Because
mine is spiritual and body-based too, right?
Yes, of course, but it's you know, my approach to things is very similar. I believe that in the therapy room, it is a microcosm of what's going on out there. I believe that my relationship with the client and vice versa often is this transference, projection, and that kind of interaction, and that the whole idea is to really hear what's coming up in a client, and to, in order to help uncover the patterns and the causes of some of those patterns, so that the more conscious they become, the easier it is to implement change in their lives.
Absolutely, and I think where you and I are similar is that we're synthesizers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good therapy is good therapy, and each therapist has to find their own lens
mm-hmm.
and their own doorway. But what I have found when people come into my office who've been to a lot of other kinds of, I won't even say therapies, Stuart, I'll say therapists.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Is, first of all, it takes a lot of courage for a therapist to really be in the room using themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right? right?
Great, yeah.
Not just to be there as a coach, not just to be there giving support, which is lovely, mm-hmm. but to really be there to kind of in kind of a shamanistic way, you know, to go under with somebody into some very scary, dark places,
mm-hmm.
and be willing to go on the journey with that. And not a lot of therapists are really able or willing to do that. And I'm constantly surprised that people will come in and they'll say, I know that about myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
right.
I'll say, well, you know it with your, okay, well, one of my answers is, well, if you know it, so isn't that interesting that you persist in doing it?
Mm-hmm.
What is in the way here?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of therapists have not made genetic linkages, meaning where did you form that idea?
Mm-hmm.
How old are you when you're thinking that?
Exactly. That's exactly what I do with
right?
my approach to things, too.
What does that remind
yeah.
you of, right?
Yeah. How old do you feel right now as you're talking about this, and to go back there? And a lot of my approach, because I also use a technique called rebirthing, which
mm-hmm.
is also associating the birth trauma and the birth experience and everything else with having formulated certain belief systems and behavior patterns, you know, like a C-section or a breech birth or other issues that were going on,
right.
Related to what you were saying earlier about, you know, the birth stage, the birth experience impacting.
Exactly, because we know, and one of the great contributions, of course, has to an understanding of human development has been psychoanalytic theory, by the way,
mm-hmm.
that different ages have different cognitive capacities, perceptual, you know, emotional capacities. So something that may have happened in the environment, and this isn't forensic, this isn't like, ah, well, we finally found, you know, the holy grail of what went on.
Uh-huh.
It's how you experienced it and at what age.
Right.
So let's say a two-year-old, you know, mommy has a problem and goes to the hospital, and the two-year-old is going to experience that as profound abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
A child who may be 11 is going to have more of a cognitive capacity to understand that mommy wasn't abandoning them. It
mm-hmm.
wasn't something they did wrong. It was because mommy got sick.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people think, oh, you know, I don't want to talk about what happened. I don't want to blame, and I have to constantly help people understand it's not what happened, although, of course, terrible traumas have happened,
mm-hmm.
sexual abuse has happened. We're not talking about that. I'm talking about, for the most part, an understanding and an experience given your level of development.
Or how they perceived it and integrated it would be words that I would use.
Absolutely.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And form templates and
mm-hmm.
then bring that into a relationship so there's an expectation, oh, people leave.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what do? Well, then I will be defensive and I'll leave first.
So part of the therapeutic process is to help people change their perceptions of situations past and present
exactly.
so that they're engaging different and showing up differently and changing the way it impacted how they felt about themselves.
Yeah, and where it gets interesting, and you do this, and it sounds like, and I certainly do, it's what is the function and the purpose of that particular life strategy and perception.
Right. How's it serving them?
Because how's it serving them? Because
right.
sometimes you don't know what you would do without it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost organized your way of being in the world.
And usually it's just a fear of living without it because it's just so familiar.
Exactly.
So we're going to take another short break here, and we'll be back with Constance Kaplan and Tell the Truth Faster. Stay tuned.
Tell the Truth Faster. We'll be right back after this station break.
Stuart Altschuler, a licensed practicing psychotherapist since 1974, wants to let you know about his website at www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You will find the resources you need in these areas: self-empowerment, positive thinking, attention deficit disorder, individual and group HIV/AIDS counseling, addictions and compulsive behavior, intimacy and relationships. Get the information you need on these topics and more. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com. There's even a place to email Stuart with your questions, comments, and requests for information regarding his work. At www.tellthetruthfaster.com, you can find additional links for groups, organizations, and websites dedicated to help you identify and heal the issues you are experiencing. Visit www.tellthetruthfaster.com today.
There's nothing more important than the safety and well-being of your family. At Reliable Home Security, we care about your family as if we were helping to protect our own. We provide home security services and solutions for family, seniors, and homebound individuals. We work with the industry's most popular and established companies. Learn more about Reliable Home Security's alarm, emergency response, and monitoring services. Call us now at 602-348-7735. That's 602-348-7735.
The Free American Hour is a radio show that believes there is a genuine, well-documented plan to force American citizens into a global government, complete with one-world banking, a planetary ID system, as well as an international police force and a disarmed populace. If you're one of the few who has the guts to face the facts that loom behind the autocratic media's version of truth, then you need the Free American Hour. This show will also spotlight alternative health-related topics. Truth and health, two of the most important things in life in one show. That's the Free American Hour, Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on AM 1100, Hot Talk KFNX.
You're listening to Hot Talk 1100 KFNX. Tune into Imus in the Morning from 5 to 9 a.m. and in the afternoons, the Tom Likas Show from 4 to 8 p.m.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. My guest tonight is Constance Kaplan, a psychotherapist in Los Angeles. And our topic tonight is psychoanalysis and homosexuality. And the show's actually going by so quickly that I really want to get into a couple of specific questions with you, Connie. And it's kind of twofold, and then I'll just kind of give you the mic and you can just go with it. One of them is, what are some of the psychoanalytic assumptions about gay men and women that need to be readdressed? And what are some of the new clinical perspectives on growing up gay within the context of psychoanalysis?
Okay.
And you got 6 minutes.
Yeah, 6 minutes, all right.
to do a textbook.
how do we boil it down? The number one assumption is that sexuality is not dichotomous. You're not gay or straight. We don't, you know, the assumption that, I'm not saying we don't make choices, but in terms of how we experience sexual development, contemporary theory recognizes that there are a multitude of possibilities in how we arrive at who we are. It's influenced by intrapsychic, interpersonal, and biological forces. There's no single route to the development of adult sexuality. You know, the heterosexuality was always considered to be what is the mark of a mature adult. And homosexuality was considered to be an arrested development from heterosexuality. Right? That's a very, very crucial point.
Say that again.
That heterosexuality was considered to be kind of an unimpinged in development. In other words, you go through the Oedipal period, which is you go from the relationship between me and mommy to me, mommy, and that third person over there, usually daddy, but we're finding out, you know what, you can do it with two mommies and two daddies too. But it's going from a twosome to a threesome where you make a major maturational leap into maturity. But how we do it, how we navigate the Oedipal challenges is so varied in terms of, you know, how we identify with, do we identify with our mothers or our fathers or both? How do we internalize what is masculine and what is feminine? You can have a heterosexual man who feels like he's very masculine and, you know, he's identified with his mother. You can have a homosexual man whose love object is his father, and he's more identified with his father than his mother, so he's not typically feminine at all. Mm-hmm. Do you get what I'm saying in terms
of
how you play with these concepts?
That there aren't, that the stereotypes are not true.
Exactly.
Like anything else, stereotypes do exist, but they're the obvious aspects of a huge range of what is really in existence.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's essential. Mm-hmm. Because what it brings us to is that there's a very strong possibility that homosexuality is what we call bedrock, that it's not a a regression from heterosexuality that we may, because of constitutional issues, because of how we have internalized identifications with our parents, how they have viewed us, cultural understandings, that we develop in a myriad of ways, which is why we refer to it as homosexualities and heterosexualities. And I think that that's very, very important. And then you add to it defenses, compromises, adaptations. In other words, you know, we have an internal life. And so in the Oedipal challenge, we get into a kind of rivalrous situation. How do we deal with that rivalry? Do we back off? Do we get more assertive? Do we get more passive, more aggressive? Which is defines when you look at heterosexual men and women, homosexual men and women, you can see the whole myriad of how people identify their sexual, what their sexual identities are all about.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of make sense?
It does to me.
And also, you know, if you look at a homosexual boy. Ordinarily, we would assume that that the attraction for a boy would be, you know, toward his mother. The erotic attraction would be toward the mother. He would then take the father on as his rival, and then, as a way to cope with, of course, the enormity of that, the fear of all that, he identifies with his father, right?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of goes on to want a woman of his own down the line, but. And then the mother embraces him in kind of a romantic, she has her own romance going with him. And so he begins to learn what it's like to be the beloved in a woman's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
For the homosexual boy, his erotic attachment is toward the father. Now what can happen is the father's thinking, whoa, what's this? And he starts to pull away, because he's uncomfortable or ambivalent with the strong love affair that the son has with his father. The mother, thinking, I'm over here, it's supposed to be me, starts to get a little more involved and intrusive, which, by the way, may be another understanding of that whole scenario that we've always heard, you know, powerful castrating mothers and distant withdrawing fathers,
mm-hmm.
as being the cause of male homosexuals, may actually be a complete distortion. It may be that, you know, here's a little boy who's lovingly reaching out for his father. His father, who's grown up in a heterosexual society, is confused. He doesn't understand the passionate longings of a little boy for his daddy. He pulls away. Mother gets more involved. And you see this come up in therapy sometimes. And then what happens is we all need to be mirrored in our parents' eyes. We need to be able to know that our internal experience is being mirrored in the ways that their gleam, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this is a good thing. So if you're getting a mismatch, why is my love for you, Daddy, such a bad thing? And it's a mismatch. What can happen is it can bring on shame. It can bring on withdrawal. It can bring on a sense of badness. What's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. And then you get some of the issues that gays and lesbians come into therapy with, which isn't because they're homosexual. It's because of the difficulties of growing up homosexual.
Right. Excellent. We're going to take a short break and come back for our last segment, so please stay tuned.
Tell the truth faster. We'll be right back after this station break.
School psychologists are hard to find. That's why Hunt Psychological Services, LLC, is here to meet the special education and psychological needs of both children and adults. Treva Hunt, the owner and executive director, is a certified school psychologist, a member of the National College Review Board, an international speaker, and adjunct professor for Northern Arizona University. Hunt School Psychological Services provides multicultural assessments, psychological evaluations, educational consultation, and employee training on such topics as cultural awareness, academic motivation, ADHD, and behavioral management. Reliable, confidential, up-to-date, and professional. For more information, please call 623-487-7947. That's Hunt Psychological Services, LLC, 623-487-7947.
Did you know that 9 out of 10 psychotherapy clients surveyed by Consumer Reports said that psychotherapy had helped them? Dr. Mike Davison, host of Possibilities Radio, is a licensed clinical psychologist who works with people's challenges in a pragmatic, solution-focused, and typically short-term manner. Dr. Davison's practice also provides psychological assessment, which gives a rich description of an individual's perceptions regarding themselves and others. Forensic consultation, which can provide a comprehensive profile of a person's psychological status for attorneys or judges, as well as business and organizational consulting, executive coaching, staff retreats, and workshop training. For more information about how Dr. Mike Davison can help you, visit his website at www.drdavison.com or call toll-free 1-800-470-3257. That's www.drdavison.com or 1-800-470-3257.
You're listening to Arizona's Hot Talk Station, offering the most unique programming, 1100 KFNX.
Tell the Truth Faster is back. Here's Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster, Connie. I want to know if there are, I know that you touched base on new clinical perspectives already in terms of that Oedipal complex. Is there anything else as we're closing up here, because we only have a few minutes left, and I want you to make I want to make sure you have time to at least talk for about a minute about the conference this Saturday here
sure.
in L.A.?
Just one other new area of research that I think is really useful and very helpful is the issue of overstimulation. You know, here gay boys and girls are isolated, you know, for boys are put together, girls are put together because supposedly, you know, it's too stimulating to be with the other. But for the gay child who are attracted to the same sex, you can imagine how incredibly overstimulating it is to be in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And you're already trying to protect your own, you know, secret differences and your badness of others because, you know, all along you've been told and you feel that this is wrong. And there's all this excitement. And what can happen is it can start to lead to a massive suppression of feelings and to isolation and shame. We see with a number of gay women that they numb out in the face of arousal and sexual desire because arousal has come to be something that feels bad and very hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
Or they get extremely overwhelmed and kind of disorganized and flooded. So it can, you know, kind of a, I find a number of heterosexual people when I point out to them, you know, the obviousness of this, they're shocked. It's like, God, I didn't even think of that. What must it be like for a little gay boy to be surrounded by all of this, or a little girl to be surrounded by all of this and not have any kind of containment or anywhere to put it,
mm-hmm.
and how it later on wreaks havoc,
right,
with what should be healthy and wonderful passion,
right.
So that I think is for me is one of the most interesting areas of looking at the normative life cycle of gays and lesbians and some of the challenges that and themes that come up in their life cycle. So instead of looking at it as pathology, we're looking at what is unique to their development.
Great. So with that being said, can you briefly tell us about the conference this Saturday on May 4th
sure.
here in Los Angeles that you're organizing?
The conference is called Rethinking Homosexuality. And, you know, it is fairly new in the analytic field to be coming from this point of view. And a lot of the people that you mentioned in the beginning are in it. You know, Ralph Rauten, who's a clinical professor at Emory University, and Gary Grossman from San Francisco, and Susan Vaughn from Columbia University. And, of course, Judd Marmer, who is an icon. He is one of the analysts who spoke up in 1973 when the American Psychiatric Association removed homosexuality from its diagnostic manual. He stood firmly behind it when other analysts were saying, no way, Jose, and it took them 20 years to catch up to Dr. Marmer. Mm-hmm. So he's really a very, very special person. We're meeting at UCLA at the Faculty Center. It is only for clinicians, please. It is so important that we try to
educate. Is it also for graduate students who are in the mental health field?
It can be graduate students in the mental health field. It can be licensed. It's licensed clinicians or people who are training. It is not for the public because we need to have a room where we can talk very plainly to one another. I will bring that forum on homophobia to Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and we'll do a whole public forum.
Great.
And if you are interested in, we have very few seats left, but if you are interested, you can contact the Southern California Psychoanalytic Society, and the number is 323-655-1634. If you're interested in coming on Saturday, but you must call because we have limited spaces and people will be turned away at the door. And that's what we're doing.
Okay. I want to thank you for being a guest tonight before I go into some closing thoughts and to remind people that as of tomorrow morning, you'll also be able to get an email to Constance Kaplan so that you can get more about the workshop on Saturday, if you didn't catch that phone number, and the show will be on archived on audio on the website tellthetruthfaster.com in about a week and a half, so you can listen to this again or tell your friends to listen in if you felt like it was important. Connie, thank you so much for being a guest tonight.
Oh, it was really my pleasure.
We got a lot in a very short time.
Kind of the Evelyn Wood version.
Yeah. And I want to remind people also that on March 28th of this year, I was on State of Mind, which is on KFNX on Thursday afternoons, with Peggy Lemire, and the topic was homophobia and how it affects teenagers. I want to close with a quick quote by Alan Havisi, who is also one of the speakers at the Foundation Public Forum. America has been more successful than most societies in labeling bigotry for what it is, the evil that it is, the stupidity, the ignorance, the anger and the hatred, and ultimately the violence that flows from it. In institutional American life, it is no longer acceptable, for the most part, for people to be overtly anti-Semitic or overtly racist and overtly sexist, or to express in generalized way negative feelings about the disabled. The one bigotry that remains acceptable in large portions of American society is the bigotry against gay men and lesbians. Mm-hmm. So I leave you with that thought. And ask you all to tune in next week for Tell the Truth Faster. Thanks for listening.
Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, is broadcast live every week at the same time. Thank you for listening.